From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point from Charlotte and the Democratic National Convention. 4 more years is the Democrats' chant in the convention hall this week, loud last night, and forward, not back, is their call for an Obama re-election. The Dems are fired up on the heels of the GOP's big convention rally in Tampa. But for many of those sitting at home, wondering when the next job will come, worrying about a mortgage, there is a straight-up yearning for the pain to end, and a straight-up question of who is better to end it, to boost the economy. This hour in Charlotte, we're hearing from Democratic delegates and dueling thinkers on Obama, the Democrats, and the American economy. You can join the conversation. Does President Obama have the vision, the plan, the sway to bring jobs back? Who's winning you on the economic way ahead? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We've got Democratic delegates standing by here in Charlotte. But first, Karen Tumulty, national political correspondent for The Washington Post, joins us in Charlotte to look at the Democrats' convention kickoff last night. Karen, great to have you right here. Here's a little bit of Michelle Obama last night.
Barack knows the American dream because he's lived it. And he wants everyone in this country, everyone, to have the same opportunity, no matter who we are or where we're from or what we look like or who we love.
American dream, Karen, can mean a lot of things. Opportunity generally means economic things. There was a strong thread of that running through all the speeches last night. What did you think of night one of the Democrats' convention, the lineup they put out there?
The lineup was so diverse, and it was a real indication of the various groups and interests that they are going to have to appeal to and have to get really fired up if they are going to win this election. The First Lady's speech, I thought, was really interesting. I had gone back and watched her speech from Denver, and, you know, that she played a lot of the same themes, which was introducing her family as a quintessentially American family with a quintessentially American story. But this time around, she also spoke of her experience of the last 4 years. And in the entire speech, I thought the most interesting line was a none-too-subtle dig at Mitt Romney, where she said, "I have seen the hard decisions that come across the president's desk, and they are ones that are not driven by data and analysis. They are driven by your values."
Going to the core of the man was kind of the dig at Romney there. Do you know Mitt Romney's core?
Exactly. And, you know, then this comes right after Julian Castro, the mayor of San Antonio.
37 years old, first Latino mayor of San Antonio, rising star. People are saying maybe like Obama in 2004.
I thought that was interesting because his message was Mitt doesn't get it. And again, it was so much about it, making the argument that the Republican ticket just doesn't have the same values, at least, you know, as this group of Americans here.
Lots of digs at Mitt Romney last night, and some of the toughest from former Ohio governor and co-chair of the president's reelection campaign, Ted Strickland, to give a fiery speech about Romney and his economic policies.
Mitt Romney never saw the point of building something when he could profit by tearing it down. If Mitt was Santa Claus, he would fire the reindeer and outsource the elves.
Oh, boy, we got Santa Claus, bad Santa on the floor last night. There's been a lot of talk, Karen, about an enthusiasm gap. It shows up in the polls when you look at Republicans and Democrats. Republicans ahead on that enthusiasm, in their case, to change the occupant of the White House. There was a lot of enthusiasm in the hall last night. Does that translate nationally? Do we know?
Well, we won't know, of course, until after this convention. But, you know, the Republicans in our polling in the Washington Post had been behind in their enthusiasm, specifically for their candidate. Mm-hmm. And we had a poll come out just yesterday that suggests that while there was not much of an overall bump from the Republican convention, that Republicans themselves came away much more enthusiastic with much higher favorable impressions of Mitt Romney. And that was particularly true among Republican women, where our polling showed something like a 20-point increase in favorability.
And then here in Charlotte, this young rising maybe Democratic star last night, San Antonio Mayor Julian Castro, attacking here, talking about economics, the GOP approach on the economy in his keynote speech last night.
Republicans tell us that if the most prosperous among us do even better,
that somehow the rest of us will too. Folks, we've heard that before. First they called it trickle down. Then they called it supply side. Now it's Romney Ryan, or is it Ryan Romney? Either way, their theory's been tested. It failed. Our economy failed. The middle class paid the price. Your family paid the price. Mitt Romney just doesn't get it.
The young mayor of San Antonio, Texas last night, Julian Castro. Let's get some delegates in here. They're raising the roof in Charlotte this week. And with us right now, Delegate Linda Chapalavia from Aurora, Illinois. She's a state rep from Aurora and owner with her husband of a defibrillator manufacturing company. Also a real estate broker, retired officer in the Army Reserve. With us here in Charlotte, Linda Chapalavia. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And with us in Charlotte, Arizona Delegate Neil Giuliano, four-term mayor of Tempe, Arizona, until 2004. Past national president until 2009 of GLAAD, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation. Neil Giuliano, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Neil, what did you think of the speeches last night? And what about the message on the economy? Mitt Romney just doesn't get it. We heard this the opposite last week in Tampa. Barack Obama just doesn't get it.
Well, the message was strong. I think we heard last night the beginning of the real crystallization of the message, especially to those critical, undecided voters in parts of the country. And that is, as the mayor said, Mitt doesn't get it. And this president does, has shown strong leadership, has shown strong determination on the important issues of the day, and has put us on a path, a better path, to a better future.
What's the evidence of that? I mean, you're here to reelect the guy, but we've got 8.3% unemployment. The Republicans have the debt clock ticking in Tampa. It's gone over $16 trillion now. Mm-hmm. Americans are worried about it. They look at Barack Obama, and you can see also in polls many who say, I really like the guy, but I'm not sure now. And Republicans tried very hard last week to sort of go after that population. What's the evidence to you that Obama's leadership on the economy is working?
The job growth has been in the positive. The stock market has been improving. We're seeing some of the markets, especially in the capital markets, reinvestment starting to take place. The capacity is being rebuilt. You know, the way I look at it is we've been driving on ice. And what do you do when you drive on ice? You drive steady. You drive carefully. And that, I think, has been the way we have approached this economy.
So you wouldn't be happier with 10 times as many jobs created?
Well, of course we would be happier.
Ice or no ice.
Of course we all acknowledge we want it to be better and we're working for it to be better. But the choice is becoming clear, and you began to hear that last night. The choice between going back to what got us into the situation we're in or moving forward on the path that we have been on. Without a doubt, we need to stay the path that we're on.
Linda, there was a lot of talk about opportunity and inclusiveness last night, and getting everybody in on the economic party. But what about those around this country? Wall Street Journal, tough critics, pointing out today that there are now 46 million-plus Americans on food stamps. All-time record, annual cost of $71 billion, $770 billion, obviously, over a decade. Right. What about Americans who look at this and say, you know what? We'd love to help everybody, but we can't afford this path.
Right. No, I being a state representative for the last 10 years and watching Barack go through his metamorphosis as president from Illinois senator, there's a lot of growth curve there. But you also have to understand when we won this last time with Barack as president of the United States, we were in bad shape. And it was like sending in a seventh inning pitcher, relief pitcher, to get us out of it. Mm-hmm. It took us a while to get in it, and it's going to take us a while to get out. Every commitment that the president has said he was doing, he's going to end the war, get out of Iraq. He said he was going to go after Bin Laden at all costs and try to get that done. We have to also understand, under his responsibilities as the president of the United States, it doesn't say he's going to create a job for you. What he said he was going to do is help get the economic status of the state and the country going. I think he's done that very good job. In the last five quarters, the housing markets have been bumped up. They're increasing. I think the
focus...
But
don't people expect the president to help create jobs? You say he didn't promise to create a job for you. People need jobs.
Right, and that's understandable. The climates in the state are just as bad as the federal government is right now. But remember, it didn't take one person to get in this problem, in this situation. It's not going to take one person to get us out of it. We need to put him back in the office so he can complete his work, so we can go back to the prosperity we have. All indicators right now are showing that we're on the upswing. But being also the head of the elementary and secondary ed in the state, and I've been there with reforms, and mm-hmm. we were able to do it with the unions at the table, mm-hmm. we have to understand the main focus right now, folks, should be early childhood education.
Big
for
emphasis on that
economic, for economic development of this country and how we
Castro
rank around
saying,
the world.
If you're serious about business, you're serious about early childhood education. I mean, if you are serious, you can't. There's no denying.
No denying.
Very true. But, Neil, still, at the same time, a lot of talk about investment, public investment in this country. And, again, many hearts surge to that. And then people look over at the bottom line and say, whoa, but can we afford it?
It's wise investment. One thing we know is that you don't reduce the deficit by cutting education.
Right.
You don't reduce the deficit by cutting research and development, the kind of things that we need to be investing in to build our economy stronger for the long term. So I heard very positive messages about that. And I think those are the messages that when people sit down and think about it, especially in the manufacturing area where manufacturing is starting to grow again, people are going to realize we are on the right path.
What do you think here, Karen? There's a lot of talk about that investment in people. But there's the fiscal challenge at the same time. Or is that a false tension?
Well, I think that a lot of people across the country, at least, are going to be listening for a sense out of this convention and specifically out of the president's speech on Thursday night of a path forward, of a plan, of an explanation why things would be different if he gets a second term.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're in Charlotte at the Democratic National Convention talking with Democrats and more soon about the economy, how they really see 8% plus unemployment and the way ahead. Karen Tumulty of The Washington Post is with us, national political correspondent, and a couple of Democratic delegates here at the convention this week, Linda Chapalavia from Aurora, Illinois, Neil Giuliano, former mayor of Tempe, Arizona, both with us. Here was the San Antonio mayor, Julian Castro again last night, accusing Mitt Romney of being out of touch when earlier this month Romney had advised students at an Ohio university to start a business by borrowing money from their parents.
I don't think Governor Romney meant any harm. I think he's a good guy. He just has no idea how good he's had it. We know that in our free market economy, some will prosper more than others. What we don't accept is the idea that some folks won't even get a chance. And the thing is, Mitt Romney and the Republican Party are perfectly comfortable with that America. In fact, that's exactly what they're promising us.
Neil, I see you nodding at that. Mitt Romney and his party perfectly comfortable with that unequal America, and yet the Republicans saying, look, have you got a job? Are you better off?
Well, I think we're all a product of where we've come from in life.
Mm-hmm.
And very clearly, what the mayor was just talking about there is where Mitt Romney has come from in life. So that's going to be his perspective, and he can't shake that. There's no way that he can shake that. I think President Obama is in the perfect position, and the choice is going to be even more clear as we move forward into the general election campaign from this convention.
What's he going to do in a second term that he couldn't or didn't do in the first that will take us away from 8.3% unemployment?
Well, clearly, Congress is going to have to come together with a long-term fiscal plan, a fiscal deal. And that's going to be a challenge, but I think the president has shown that he's willing to come to Congress and work with Congress to make that happen.
He didn't get it done last summer. Who's to say they're going to come together in another 4 years?
Well, I think they will come together in the next 4 years.
Why?
Because
what's different?
I think the second term is going to be very different. I think where we're at in the economy is going to be different. Look, we heard from the Republicans at the very beginning of this presidency that they were going to do everything they can, and all of their decisions were going to be focused on ensuring that Barack Obama did not get another term. And if you think that that did not go into the thinking, the way that they've played out their decisions on dealing on some of these issues, I think that's wrong. I think they actually were thinking that way.
Linda, what do you see?
Yeah,
if there's a second Obama term, what's different? What can people look
forward
to?
Okay, so there's a couple of things I want to say here. So how do we get into the middle of the mess in this first presidential reign of Barack Obama? The Republicans didn't want to play with us, right? So mm-hmm. we were almost getting ready to go in default. Mm-hmm. Our bond rating as a country went down the tubes. Mm-hmm. They're a partner with us. What I'd like to say is there's 80%.
Some partnership.
Right, and there's there's 80% of the population out there that is sick and tired of both sides playing politics with their children's lives right now. Whether you're a Democrat, Republican, Independent, doesn't matter. We need, as people on the streets, need to start a grassroots effort to say we're tired of you bickering and putting a line in the sand on our child's future. It's not the Democratic fault. It's not the Republicans' fault. It's the American people for not demanding them to work together.
Karen Timothy, do you see a different dynamic emerging in a second term, if there is one, for President Obama?
The political reality is that if President Obama is reelected, he is likely to come back to a Congress that has more Republicans in it, not fewer, and possibly even a Republican Senate. So what you hear some Democrats, like Senator Chuck Schumer, arguing is that he's got to stop trying to negotiate deals inside, and he's got to go outside and build public opinion more than he has. Now, Ronald Reagan...
But wouldn't he be doing that right now? If that's the plan, I mean, do it now and elect a Democrat.
Because, well, at this point...
If that's possible.
This would be to sell a plan, as Ronald Reagan did with a Democratic Congress for tax cuts in 1981. But the fact is, too, that if Barack Obama gets reelected, he's not going to probably have the kind of landslide that Reagan did that was really a force on Congress. So it is something of a muddle.
And he's up against Mitt Romney, who is out there. He was there last week in Tampa making his case against Obama's economic policies.
In the richest country in the history of the world, this Obama economy has crushed the middle class. Family income has fallen by $4,000, but health insurance premiums are higher. Food prices are higher. Utility bills are higher, and gasoline prices, they've doubled. Today, more Americans wake up in poverty than ever before. Nearly one out of six Americans is living in poverty. Look around you. These aren't strangers. These are our brothers and sisters, our fellow Americans.
Mitt Romney last week, Linda, what were you thinking? He's saying, come on, they're in poverty. Let's do something. Let's change.
This goes back to, you can pay for your own college or ask your parents to pay for it. And what's the last poll we had on? Even the richer 10% of the country said they would welcome an income tax increase. Let's talk about how we're going to fund these things, right? And it's important. God bless them, but I don't know about you. I don't know anybody who's paid over $8 million in taxes in a year and And then they say that out of one side, and the other side say, why don't you ask your parents for the money to pay for college? And there's a lot of contradiction. There's a lot of interesting things. But, base home again. We got to take it to the people. The people have to force this upon an elected official. Whether it's Barack in the presidency in the White House or whether it's Romney, they're going to have the same issues with Congress as getting things done. And the only way we can do it, people out there, is wake up and get involved.
Of course, voting day is the most effective day to do it one way or the other. And if the Democrats come back and it's still a Republican House, maybe even a Republican Senate. Let's get our listeners in here. Mark in Acton, Massachusetts. Mark, you're on the air. Do you want to change? Do you want to stay the course? Do you want to change under Obama or Mitt Romney? What do you say, Mark?
No, Obama's got the right prescription. You've got to grow the middle class, and you do that by investing in infrastructure. And there's no doubt, by the way, that we're better off than we were 4 years ago. 4 years ago, almost this week, Hank Paulson was on bended knee begging Nancy Pelosi to give him the votes he needed to prevent another global depression. So we're better off. The problem is we're better off 4 years ago than we were 4 years ago. We're not better off than we were 12 years ago because under George Bush, the private sector had 650,000 fewer jobs when he left than when he started.
So what do you take from that? What do you take from that, Mark? What do you take from that?
What I take from that is the irony that Mitt Romney wants to return to the same policies under George Bush that led to that problem. That was tax cuts for the rich, driving up income inequality, and cutting regulation, which led to the blow-up 4 years ago today.
And we hear you saying no thanks to that. And Obama needs to what?
He needs to continue trying to invest in infrastructure, putting people to work, because when you put dollars in the pockets of construction workers and other people, it has a ripple effect throughout the economy. Demand
$16 trillion in debt now. Are you worried about that, Mark? That investment costs money.
That's a long-term problem. The first thing you got to do, and the best thing you can do for bringing down the debt, is to get people back to work so they can pay taxes. You do that in the short run. In the long run, if you grow the economy, the debt will get paid down.
Well, I mean, I hear your perspective loud and clear. Still, it's 8.3% unemployment. It's a lot better in terms of the rate of job loss and the rate of job growth than 4 years ago, but that's still a big number. Let me get one more right here. Beaufort, North Carolina. Michael is calling. Hi, Michael. You're on the air.
Hi. So I loved the energy last night. I just had two, and I love the speakers. I love the audience. Two comments. One, on the jobs issue just discussed, there should have been more focus on that. There was, I mean, maybe this is the night they wanted to get all the peripheral, important moral issues out of the way. The other thing is, I'm a white voter, and I love the fact that the audience was totally different from Republican, but I almost had a tough time finding myself there. And I would just urge for the next 2 days, they don't forget about the broad middle, unless they've given up on a white male voter, but a few of the nice, smiling, handsome white voters in the faces, in addition to all the wonderful rainbow faces.
Well, it's Michael, I appreciate your call. It's interesting that you raise that. I mean, there, Linda, there was talk last week about a very white Republican convention. Now, this is a very colorful,
diverse,
shall we say.
Very diverse.
But there's Michael looking as the TV camera spans the audience, right, and he's saying, hey, wait a minute, where am I, the white guy? And he's not wrong.
Right. Well,
this is a convention in many, many dimensions. Is it, I don't know, it looks like way majority to me, of color.
Yeah. Well, what's the country made up of, right? The
majority a lot of, white people
of the minority,
too.
Right? But the majority together makes up the minority makes up the majority of the country right now. We're leading on that trajectory. So I don't see it that way. Being from Illinois, we're extremely diverse, and I had a great time running around the whip area and making sure everybody's in their seat. I don't see that. I see a sea of United States. I see not the melting pot, but the salad bowl that we should have. And I'm proud of that. And I'm proud of both conventions, really, take it heart, that people want to get involved in the political process. But it looked to me more like a Chicago where I'm from.
Yeah, sure.
You know? So,
but Neil, what about in political terms? Here's a voter, and he says, gosh, I'd like to see a little bit more of myself there. What do you respond to that? It's a political issue for him.
Well, I'm here. I'm a white man. Mm-hmm. I see myself in this crowd. And in fact, we're pretty dominant in this crowd, even if you may not see us. The white men are
the secret power.
Just very visible and very involved. I mean, you just look at all the pundits on all the shows and so forth. The voices of the white men are not being lost in this country.
Well, that's true.
And tonight, of course, we're having, you know, the best messenger to white middle-class America the Democratic Party has, which is Bill Clinton.
Right.
Yes, sure. And he'll be front and center there. But it is interesting just to see the very different coloration. And it's kind of, neither one looks to me like right down the middle. One leans the one way, one maybe leans a little bit the other way. It may look like Chicago, but the country's bigger than Chicago.
Right.
But the real way to lead is to lead with inclusion. And if you look at what party is making the effort and being successful with including more Americans in the dialogue that we have, it's clearly the Democratic Party.
Neil Giuliano, Arizona delegate here in Charlotte, and Linda Chapalavia, Illinois delegate here in Charlotte. It's great to have both of you with
Thank
us.
You
Thank
so
you so much,
much
for
Thank
coming
you.
By. Thank you very much. And we're just hearing, Karen, that the president's speech, which was going to be in the big outdoor stadium to kind of echo the Denver stadium of 4 years ago, Charlotte's weather has been wet and messy, and it will not be now. It will be right here, over our shoulder here, in the indoor arena in Charlotte. That's going to be a little different energy.
Yes, but I am, for one, I'm relieved given the security rules that don't allow you to carry umbrellas through the magnetometers.
That could be one soggy night. Karen Tumbley is with us, national political correspondent for The Washington Post. We're looking at the American economy. The Democrats take their on up against the Republicans' take last week out of Tampa. With us right now from Washington is Jared Bernstein. He is a senior fellow, Center for Budget and Priorities, was chief economist and economic advisor to Vice President Joe Biden from 2009 to 2011, was executive director of the White House Task Force on the Middle Class and a member of President Obama's economic team. Jared Bernstein, thanks very much for being with us.
Well, thank you for inviting me, Tom.
And with us from Washington, Andrew Biggs. He's a resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, principal deputy commissioner of the Social Security Administration under George W. Bush. Andrew Biggs, thank you for joining us as well.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Andrew, let me come first to you. You're the conservative eye on all this. How do you see, if there are two paths laid out on the American economy now from these two conventions, and this one's just getting going, but there was a lot of talk about the economy last night. How do you see the two paths, the choice here, Andrew?
Well, the economy is obviously the dominant issue. There's other issues around. The convention last night talked a little bit about abortion rights. People are talking a little bit about foreign policy. But pocketbook issues are dominating this time around. And the debate is really who is going to improve things for folks going forward. The Democrats are having a tough time, and I think kind of a silly little debate now of, you know, are we better off today than we were 4 years ago? I think by any rational standard, we're not, and certainly if If the roles were reversed, I doubt we would see Barack Obama defending the claim that Republicans had made us better off. I mean, the unemployment is higher today, particularly long-term unemployment, which is a real problem because people get locked out of the labor force. They lose their skills. Deficits and debt are up. The credit rating of the United States is down. Family
but
incomes
what's the
and
choice people
are
being? Andrew, I'm asking you to look at the choice in strategy, I guess, between what Republicans are laying out and what you're hearing from Democrats, what you've seen from the Obama administration, and would expect in a second term if it comes.
Well, I think the question is sort of asking, you know, which is the cart and which is the horse? I think from the point of view of the Romney folks, the private sector and then the free market economy has to be the real driver. Without the income and wealth that the private sector produces, there's not much that government can afford because government doesn't produce money on its own. I think the point of view coming from the Democrats and from the Obama administration is that government has to be a much more active participant in guiding the market, shaping the market, trying to be a real active player there. And that's been a long time sort of philosophical debate about the role of government. But I think that's the choice that people are going to be faced with, of which do you try to empower the private sector and build government off of that, or do you think government is really going to be the leader on this? And I think that the track record so far for the Obama administration has been not great.
Jared, how about that framing? Is it a cart and horse and cart choice here? Which is out front?
No, I think that framing is far too kind of black and white or 40,000 feet up. It's not the case that Republicans don't believe in government playing a role in the economy and Democrats are all about that. I mean, you can find lots of Republicans supporting subsidies all over the place. I mean, one of the contentious ones, for example, is to oil companies and producers of fossil fuels. The Democrats say get those out. The Republicans say keep them in. So I think you have to be careful about drawing such broad distinctions. I also want to point out that ever since the president has been in office, we've been in the midst of the largest market collapse since the Great Depression. So I don't think there's any doubt that any president, regardless of his political color, would have done the same kinds of things. In fact, if you think back to 2008, you saw George Bush embracing significant Keynesian stimulus.
But what do you mean ever since? I mean, the market's come way back since the collapse.
It's right. So that's the other point I wanted to make, Tom. I mean, I thought Andrew kind of was, he called this silly debate about 4 years ago, and then he put his own shading on it. Look, I was there 4 years ago, and I remember GDP was cratering. GDP was declining at a rate of 9%. Andrew's an economist. He knows how horrific that is. That was the fourth quarter of 2008. Three quarters later, in the second half of 2009, GDP was growing, and it's been growing ever since.
Employment, yeah, but 1.7%, that's not exactly rocket ship.
Absolutely.
Can voters, should they expect better at this point?
So that's, I wrote a blog post last night that said that the question isn't are you better off than you were 4 years ago. It says, is your first derivative moving in the right direction? Which was a very obscure way of saying, are you getting better or you're getting worse? The fact is we're doing better, but not at a fast enough rate. That's where your 1.7 comes in. You're absolutely right. But we are creating jobs. We have been for 29 months, et cetera. I won't tick through the statistics. The fact is that we are slowly moving in the right direction, and we need to accelerate that pace. No question about it.
Karen, how do you think the voters are going to look at the choice here between the two kind of economic directions the parties are offering?
Well, I think that, conventions are all about spelling out big, broad themes. Mm-hmm. And these themes are very, very different. But there's also the question of how people are feeling in their own lives. Mm-hmm. And that is not good at the moment.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point in Charlotte at the Democratic National Convention. We're talking with Democrats and more this hour about the economy, how they really see the 8% plus unemployment and the way ahead. Two parties outlining a real different emphasis in what they're prescribing for the country. Karen Tumulty of The Washington Post is here, Jared Bernstein of the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, and Andrew Biggs at the American Enterprise Institute. Of course, tough hits from Ryan and Romney in the last week and more. Here he was last month in Lakewood, Colorado, telling voters that when it comes to the economy and joblessness, America has seen a failure in leadership under President Obama. Here's Paul Ryan.
When you take a look back 4 years ago, we had a really tough economy. And without a doubt, President Obama inherited a difficult situation. Here's the problem. He made it worse.
There's the problem. He made it worse. And the president himself saying it's not good enough. Here he was July 12th in Poland, Ohio, saying, jobs numbers going in the right direction, but a lot more to be done.
We can't be satisfied because our goal was never to just keep on working to get back to where we were back in 2007. I want to get back to a time when middle-class families and those working to get into the middle class have some basic security. That's our goal. So we've got to grow the economy even faster. And we've got to put even more people back to work.
We've got to do better, said the president. But yesterday in Norfolk, Virginia, poking fun here, the president again at the Romney campaign for what he described as a lack of detail on how they would do it.
Basically, they said, first of all, everything's bad. And it's Obama's fault. And Governor Romney knows the secret to creating jobs and growing the economy. The only problem was he kept it secret. There was a lot of talk about hard truths and bold choices, but they never bothered to tell you what they were.
The president saying at the Republican convention the solution was kept a secret. So, okay, let's ask the economists what they would expect. Jared, if there's a Republican administration a few months from now, what would you expect in the next 4 years? In broad strokes, how do you think that would be different from what you'd expect from President Obama, round two?
Well, I think we can actually answer that question pretty clearly. Romney, and especially Ryan, who's left much more of a paper trail because he's the chairman of the Budget Committee, economic agenda is one where taxes get cut very sharply for those at the very top of the income scale. And part of the revenue loss from those tax cuts is made off by spending cuts, particularly on lower-income programs. So over 60% of Paul Ryan's spending cuts, a budget Romney has endorsed, come from low-income programs, whereas the $4-plus trillion in tax cuts largely benefit those at the top of the scale. They've also talked about repealing the Affordable Care Act, repealing Dodd-Frank. So this is basically a trickle-down deregulatory agenda. Folks like me believe that worked very poorly, and I think the evidence is quite strong in that direction, but you've heard others talking about that already today on your show. I think from the president, you're looking at kind of a three-part agenda moving forward. First, to build on the jobs record through investment in the longer term, and we're talking about infrastructure, clean energy, and more short-term measures like in the American Jobs Act. So, for example, private sector employment has been consistently growing. Where we've been losing jobs is on the public side. We have to do something about that. Fiscal relief to states would help. I think getting our fiscal path in order, budget sustainability, has got to be another second-term legacy, and that means compromise. That means a budget plan that includes not just spending cuts, but new revenues in the deal as well. And then finally, implementing some of the plans that are the law of the land but are being fought by conservatives and are on the Republican chopping block, and I'm specifically talking about the Affordable Care Act, a plan that adds 8 years to the life of the Medicare program, years that would be lost if we actually repealed that act.
Andrew, let's hear it from your conservative perspective. How would you compare and contrast what you would expect from an Obama administration around to a Romney administration?
Well, I think one of the difficulties in the narrative for the Obama folks is they don't want to talk too much about the policies they've enacted over the last 4 years because those policies weren't particularly popular. Healthcare reform hasn't worked out very well for them. The stimulus certainly wasn't very popular at the time. And I think it hasn't produced, I'm not going to say it didn't produce any jobs. It's very hard to throw the better part of $1 trillion in the economy.
4.5 million was the private sector number put out last night and saved the country from depression, Democrats say from the podium.
Well, that's what they would tell you. But
George Bush said we're in a meltdown. I mean, it's not as
much
as just
I think the stimulus disappointed in terms of what they thought it was going to produce for them. The difficulty, though, is they don't want to talk too much about what they did in the past, but their plans for going forward, I think, are not particularly concrete. The Democratic co-chair of the Deficit Commission, appointed by President Obama, really kind of smacked back at the president for not being aggressive enough in talking about how we reform the federal budget, how we get on top of entitlements. That same co-chair had a lot of praise for for Paul Ryan's plan, saying, look, the guy's honest, he's willing to make choices, he's willing to go after these sorts of things. So I think there's just not enough specificity there on the president's side. What are we actually going to do here?
Isn't that a big issue with Romney's plan last week? I mean, he has very upfront, Karen Tumbled. He said, look, I don't want to fill in all the details because we'll just get in a big, difficult conversation about the details.
And what President Obama is going to say in his speech, we are told, is that, look, I've got a deficit reduction plan. It's been out there for over a year. It's been sitting in front of the Congress, and the Congress isn't doing anything with it. But as long as people are looking back and sort of second-guessing the president, it's worth pointing out, too, that a lot of people on the left and a number of reputable economists say the problem with the stimulus was that it wasn't aggressive enough. And also that the administration did not move boldly enough to do something about this great kind of debt overhang and the fact that so many people are living in houses that are where they owe more money than...
Debt as in mortgage debt.
Yes.
I'm sorry, can I make a comment about this? You know, Paul Ryan, this is a reference to something Karen was just saying. Yeah, I think Paul Ryan has a terrible credibility gap. And he said a minute ago, you played tape where he said a minute ago, the president's actions made it worse when it comes to job growth. You know, the stimulus, you can criticize the stimulus from lots of different dimensions, but there's absolutely no question, and this is nonpartisan analysis that you can find by the Congressional Budget Office, for example, that it turned around GDP growth and that it turned around job growth. And Paul Ryan is patently wrong, because when the president took office, he lost over 2 million jobs in the first 3 months of his administration. We are now adding jobs. How can that be made it worse? Now, yes, we'd like to be adding jobs more quickly. We should be. But how do you get made it worse out of job hemorrhaging then and GDP and job growth now? I'd like someone to answer that question.
Well, let's get a little more nuanced in a way that's also uncomfortable for the administration, maybe even for you, Jared. I mean, there were projections by this administration. I think you and Christina Romer had one that said we'd be in significantly better shape than we are now. Why didn't that happen?
We underestimated the depth of the recession when we made those projections. That was in December of 2008, before anyone knew, before most economists knew how deep the recession was. And all we did was take the median consensus from the blue chip forecasters. What Christy and I did in our analysis was we said, whatever the unemployment rate is, and yes, we got that wrong, the difference between what would have happened and will happen under the stimulus is probably about 2 points. That is, the unemployment rate, the stimulus will shave about 2 points off of the unemployment rate at its peak. And independent analysis has confirmed that time and time again. But yes, our analysis was based on incomplete data that was simply not capturing the depth of the Great Recession.
A steeper hill than thought. Cindy in Clarksville, Tennessee is calling. Hi, Cindy. You're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Well, hi, Tom. Good to be here.
Good to have you. What do you think?
My concerns are real general, but yet in a way I think most to the point. Mm-hmm. All this talk about who is saying the truth and who's not saying the truth and whether the Democrats have the right idea or the Republicans have the right idea makes for a wonderful discussion. It makes for a great show. It makes for conventions. However, I have two words that really, I think, are the problem. And the first word is patriotism, and the second word is compromise. And the gentleman that talks about compromise, I'm very supportive of that, because I believe that we've gotten to the point now where we spend more time pointing out our finger at who's wrong and why they're wrong and why we're right and why their part won't work and our part will work, rather than loving our country and deciding that we're willing to compromise for our country. I see this, I almost want to cry sometimes when I see how the special interest groups and the two political parties and the others, but the two main ones, are just always bickering and not working together, because we are all one country and we're all supposed to love this country. And I guess I would like to see that no matter who's president. Now, I usually vote Republican. However, I would vote for a Democrat in certain circumstances. I'm not a party person. I'm an independent. But what I want to see is both sides and the Congress, if they're the opposite from the president, the opposite party, they need to work together. Because instead of trying to prove that the person's wrong and making sure, for example, the Republicans want to make sure that anything Obama says doesn't work, that was their goal this time. Likewise, I believe when Bush was president, and I didn't agree with him on a lot of things, but I felt that the Democrats were trying to make him fail.
Cindy, we've got it, and we hear that yearning. We hear it from you, and we hear it from other people for some way to thread this needle pull them together and just make it work. I mean, Karen, you know, the sort of smart set says, oh, forget about a polarization. But that yearning is out there.
I say Cindy for Congress.
Well, but she, but would she ever win with that? Because it's, you know, go to the base time here. I mean, is there room? President Obama talked no red state, no blue state. That's a long time ago now.
The last three presidents that we've elected, Bill Clinton, George Bush, Barack Obama, have all pointed at Washington and said, it's broken, but I can fix it. I can make this process work. That is not the argument this time. The argument this time is one side or the other has got to win because Washington is now so broken, it's unfixable.
The gridlock itself is a threat to the nation.
Exactly.
So, Andrew, which way does that break? Is this election going to decide that, if it breaks right or left, or if we're just stuck in gridlock?
Well, in one sense, it may make it worse, that if President Obama's reelected, he's likely to face a Republican Congress, almost certainly a Republican House, probably a strengthened Republican hand in the Senate, and potentially Republican control over the Senate. On the other hand, though, that when both parties look at the next 4 years and say, okay, we are where we are, the president's not going to be running for re-election again in 2016, maybe we can settle down and do some business here. That's certainly what happened with President Clinton, the Republican Congress, after he was re-elected in 1996. I would just, I mean, I know this will make me unpopular. I would just push back a little on the idea that, you know, all we need to be is more patriotic, as if, you know, Jared and I would agree more if we just loved our country a little bit more. You know, there's disagreements of philosophy, and I think that's important and entirely valid. There's different disagreements on empirical issues of, you know, if we pass this policy, what will happen? And those are legitimate as well. So I don't think
Americans,
have...
in fairness, but the Americans remember a time when there was more bipartisanship, and it generally coincides with a time that was better economically for this country. Doesn't it?
Well, that in part, though, what went on in earlier times, you had very strong Democratic Party control over the Congress. At that point, the obstruction and all those sorts of issues couldn't really come up because the Republicans were such a minority. Now things are much closer, and structurally, Congress is set up that it's much easier to play defense than to play offense. It's much easier to trip up the party that's in the majority than to be the party of the majority and actually get something passed.
So that's not
a problem with patriotism. That's a problem with the setup and the rules in Congress.
So Jared, what do you say?
Let me make this very concrete, if I can. And I totally agree with Andrew's point about patriotism. But I think where Cindy is 100% or more correct is on this issue of compromise. And let's make this kind of concrete. I think most objective analysts, people like to cite the Bull-Simpson budget as an example of this, and Andrew might agree with me here. Most objective analysts recognize that if we're ever going to get on a sustainable budget path, it's going to take both spending cuts and some new tax revenues. Now, a vast majority, 97% of Republicans in the House and most of the ones in the Senate, have signed a pledge to a lobbyist by the name of Grover Norquist that they will never raise taxes. That puts a stake through the heart of Cindy's compromise idea. We simply cannot move forward if people are going to pledge their fealty to lobbyists on a central issue like that. Now, I'm not saying, you know, we have to raise taxes on this group or that group, or we can have a good argument about that. That's a different show. But I would say that any rational economist who's looked at this, any fiscal person, recognizes both spending and revenues have to be in the mix. When all those people sign that pledge, it's not going to happen. I think it's a great example of the dysfunction that we've got to squeeze out of this system, or we'll be stuck where Karen says we are for a much longer time.
Well, we're in it right now. Lisa in Lexington, Kentucky. Lisa, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Hi. Very well. What do you think?
To me, the difference between what the Republicans are selling and what the Democrats are selling is that the Republicans have this fantasy that we can all be millionaires and that it should all happen within a year or two or four. Whereas, and I think a lot of the Democratic speakers touched on this last night, some things may not happen in our lifetime, but what we're working for is a better country for our children or our grandchildren, and a better country for our children isn't that they all become millionaires. It's that they have quality housing, that they have equal opportunities, that they have a chance to educate themselves without going into massive debt. And
Lisa, you've got a long time frame. Sadly, we don't. The show's coming to an end, but let me put it to Karen. I mean, There's a caller. There's a woman who's willing to think about children and grandchildren. But an awful lot of voters do think in our lifetime, and not just in our lifetime, but, hey, how about next month? I don't have a job and I need one. How do you see this issue, biggest issue of the campaign, playing at this point, Karen?
Well, I think that, again, one thing that the real challenge here, two challenges. One, they got to stir up their base and get them enthused. But the second challenge is making people feel as though if there is a second Obama term, there is also a path forward, a concrete path forward that is achievable.
Andrew says may just freeze the gearbox. Republicans get in there and say no thanks again. That's scary.
I know. I'm going to have to find more synonyms for gridlock in my stories.
But voters looking at that, I mean, some may say, geez, we just can't afford that again. Would an Obama term two have leverage he didn't have term one?
Well, and whoever gets elected is going to have to deal with this so-called fiscal cliff at the end of the year, too, which is a pretty important thing to be spelling out what you're going to do about.
I'll take that to be a maybe, right? on more leverage in a term two. A lot of passion in the hall last night. Two big views from Tampa and Charlotte. I want to thank our guests for being with us. Andrew Biggs at the American Enterprise Institute. Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks for having me.
Jared Bernstein at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. Thanks so much, Jared. And Karen Tumulty with me here in Charlotte at the Democratic National Convention. Thanks, Karen. I'm Tom Ashbrook.
You.
This is On Point.